You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food and beverage radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Oh my God, Greg, it's the first day of March.
I know, we made it.
We did it. We got through February, man. That was, there are so many people who decided to do dry February instead of dry January because it's a few days shorter. So yep. Now no one has an excuse to listen to this show and have a drink with us.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Welcome to Moist March, everybody. We made it. Pat yourselves on the back if you did dry February. Mine lasted about 72 hours this year.
Nice.
But you know what?
It's good. It's an accomplishment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also, I mean, I also did it to be slightly serious, which is, I know, is a thing that we try not to do if at all possible on the Speakeasy. But it is, even if you don't make it all the way, like the whole spirit of like doing a whole month, like white knuckling it all the way through, seeing if you can do it, to me seems like you're kind of in it for the wrong reasons, like maybe to prove something to yourself. But I think if you just spend a month, as I tried to, being a little bit more mindful, and like when you open the fridge, be like, am I reaching for a beer out of habit or just because, you know, it's late and I'm parched and I want a fun, bubbly treat? Like, even if you just do that and kind of check in with yourself, yeah. I think it's, you know, it's better. It's better to kind of like reexamine your relationship with alcohol than just, you know, send it a Dear John letter and then come back 4 weeks later and be like, I'm so sorry. You're the love of my life. I missed you. How could I ever live without you?
Oh my God. Yeah, that's totally true. Oh man. Well, it's, you know, it's, we're also edging into spring, which is great. Today is the first day of Women's History Month, which is awesome. We're going to have a lot of great guests on for that. It's daylight savings on the 12th. Which I'm also very excited about. I mean, I love spring. And there's also another holiday coming up in a couple of weeks, St. Patrick's Day, which is on the 17th, which is a Friday. So for those of you who, you know, observe that holiday, have fun, be safe. But for those of you who don't, maybe work from home that day. I don't know.
Yeah. And for those of you who are working in a bar that day, be sure to order your riot gear now so it arrives in time.
Yeah, exactly. Because Amazon doesn't do overnight delivery anymore. but you know, there's a lot of good stuff happening in the spring, and March is always fun. Speaking of Women's History Month, we actually have a really awesome guest on today. You know, we've been doing the radio show here, at least I have, for, this is our 502nd episode, over 12 years. How long have you been on with us now?
It's been, so it'll be, I think my first show was March of 2019. So it's 4 years.
Oh, there you go.
Wild. It's like, I've never had a relationship that lasted 4 years. I've never, like, since I moved out of my childhood home, I've never lived in the same place for 4 years. I don't think I've had a job at the same place for 4 years. So to think that I've been doing this for 4 years straight for close to 200 episodes now is nuts. And it's been really awesome to be a part of this. And, shepherd us through the transition from being face-to-face and eating pizza to doing this from, you know, our various closets and basements.
Right.
And also, you know, once again, thanks for all the listeners for sticking with us for, you know, that weird transition through the crazy times, and here coming out on the other side where it's spring. Hooray.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the cool thing about this show is that we can talk about really pretty much anything we want to talk about because, you know, it is a drink show, but you can relate alcohol or non-alcohol drinks to literally anything, any subject. That's why bars are such a great place to talk with rando people because you can really relate to anything, anyone and anything. So in that spirit, you know, we talked a lot on this show about, you know, those different things you can do, whether it's being a consultant or a distiller, brewer, winemaker, author, journalist, radio host, for instance. And today we're actually going to tap into that with Ashley Smith. And she actually comes from the world of radio and now works with wine enthusiasts for their show called VinFamous. And this is going to be fun because, you know, you and I both, I was in radio before I started doing booze and spirits podcasts in this radio show. And you've been doing this for a long time as well before you came on board with the Speakeasy. So we're going to be talking some radio shop today. Are you excited about that?
Super excited about that. No, yeah. And I was even saying as we were getting set up, I was like, oh, this is going to be so nice. Like, talking you through like how, you know, the podcast works, because you already know all of this. It's so nice working with people who know all the ins and outs of, you know, the recording platforms and everything. So Ashley Smith, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We're really stoked to have you and talk shop and hear about some fun wine crimes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I can definitely tell that I'm with some like former radio people, because your voices are very much like radio voices. Oh, I love it.
It's all whiskey and cigarettes over here.
Right.
My actual voice kind of sounds like Milhouse from The Simpsons. I just put this voice on just for the listeners, you know?
Right.
But yeah, tell us. I'm super excited to. It dropped today, so congratulations on launch day for Vinfamous. I'm super stoked to listen to the pilot episode later. So, don't give any spoilers, mostly for the listeners, but also for me. But can you tell us a little bit about the show, and particularly how you came to be involved in this project, and a little bit about what y'all talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we are recording this on launch day. Very, very exciting. We've been working on this since early last year, like summer last year, I think. Vinfamous is all about wine crimes and scandals. We are doing the first season, will be 6 episodes every other week. So right now we just dropped the trailer and the first episode, which is called Murder in the Vineyard, to give you a little hint about what it is about. Basically, the premise for the podcast is that every glass of wine tells a story, and usually those stories are about, you know, the flavors, the techniques, the setting, the craftsmanship, you know, all of these beautiful things that go into a good glass of wine. But this podcast gets into the darker side of wine, the underbelly of the wine world. We cover theft and fraud and arson and sabotage and even murder. It's truly very scandalous, and it has been a dream to work on, which I guess sounds maybe weird when I'm talking about murder, but as someone who comes
not when you
from...
pair murder with podcasts, everybody loves that's like chocolate and peanut butter. They just go together so well.
That is very, very true. And I've worked on like true crime podcasts. So for me, it was just kind of second nature as someone who loves wine and who is interested in true crime to do this show. It's in partnership with Pod People, which I'm a professional podcaster now, a podcast host and producer. So I don't work in radio anymore. But being like independent or freelance, you find these communities like Pod People. And that's how I was connected with Wine Enthusiast. And that's how I got this incredible gig to host Vinfamous. And I'm really, really hoping that people like the show as much as I like the show and I liked making it.
Well, you know, talking about radio transitioning into podcasting, I want to talk just at the top of the show here about the difference between radio and podcasts. So for us, this show to me is considered it's talk radio. Mm-hmm. We do very little prep other than booking the guests, you know, and like, you know, like reading a book or eggs, like there's very like production for us, for the host. I mean, I'm not saying this for Armin, because, you know, they put a lot of work into it. But for Greg and Souther and I, you know, we just book the shows and we talk to you. You actually go through and do a lot of research, and you produce the show and stitch it together beautifully with some background music and different sound bites and all this stuff. Like, there's a lot more work, I think, that goes into podcasting than what we do here, at least as hosts. So I just wanted to, I mean, wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, just hearing what we sound like so far.
I think it really depends on the show that you're putting together. But I do think that a lot more work goes into everything I do in podcasting, way more than what I used to do in radio. And I think the definition of both radio and a podcast now is so like fluid and ever changing. And they are kind of interchangeable sometimes. It's really hard to kind of pin down the difference, I guess. But in my background, I was on commercial radio stations that played alternative music usually. So I don't come from like a public radio background where it's like NPR and news and that kind of thing. I was the person who talked for 15 seconds between, you know, Nirvana and Florence and the Machine, basically. and now working with Pod People, I'm just the host of Infamous, but they have this whole team of editors and sound designers and producers that made the show what it is. And, you know, Wine Enthusiast has the contacts and the wine knowledge and, you know, the idea for this show. So it all kind of came together, but there were a lot of people, a lot of creative minds involved.
Right.
It takes a village, man. It takes a village to raise a podcast. But I'd love to hear a little bit about how sort of the origin story is. Like, how did the show come together? What was the seed that eventually grew into this vineyard of intrigue and murder that you're talking about on Vinfamous?
Especially with you coming from radio and podcasting, and then, you know, like for Greg and I and Souther, you know, we're bar owners and journalists and you know, brand ambassadors, and we've been bartenders forever, you know, and so we come from that side. But you were saying before that you actually never worked in this industry before, so I think that's really interesting. And, you know, kind of to back up what I was saying before about the fact that, like, you can be in this industry without being a bartender, right? And I think, or a sommelier in your case, right? So yeah, tell us about some of that origin detail.
Sure. Yeah, I know. I was looking at, you know, your past guests and listening to earlier episodes, and I was like, oh no, I don't have anything of like, I don't have any knowledge from that side of the world to offer. But I can speak to, you know, how I came to be involved in this project, which was joining the Pod People community. When you, you know, join as like an independent podcast producer, you kind of make this wish list of like, hey, what projects would you want to work on? And me
like coming kind of hobbies or interests.
What are your dream, like what are your favorite podcasts, and then what kind of, you know, podcasts or projects would you like to work on? And for me, I was like,
how can I drink wine and talk about murder?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think I even said like, well, I, you know, of course would love to do, you know, another true crime show or like a weird history show. That was like my original podcast. And then I think I said, oh, if there's ever a podcast about, you know, wine and like true crime related, history related, I would love to do that. And I really didn't think it would ever happen. And then I saw that they had posted Wine Enthusiast was looking for a host of their new show, Vinfamous. So I don't know how Wine Enthusiast came to have this incredible idea, but if I can imagine, they already have another podcast where they talk about wine and like the inner workings of the wine world.
The nuts and bolts of it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I know they wanted to do something, you know, more nitty gritty with a bit of, you know, storytelling and narrative. And as someone who listens to podcasts about true crime and wine, I know that there are a bunch where people drink wine and talk about true crime. And then there's a bunch where people just drink wine and talk about wine. But I don't know that there are any other podcasts that are about crimes in the wine world. And that's what kind of sets Vinfamous apart.
That's very cool. I can tell you my theory on how they came up with that idea. It involved many bottles of wine.
Probably. Yeah.
Just some spitballing. Yeah. I mean, it's funny how, you know, sometimes the idea is almost just like right in front of you. Like you said, you know, you're listening to and producing, you know, true crime podcasts and some wine podcasts. And then you're like, well, why can't you do both? It's like the ultimate mashup.
Yeah. Combine the two.
Yeah. Boom. There you go. And it's greater than some of its parts.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really happy with how it turned out, and that we were able to tell such interesting stories respectfully, because each episode also involves the people around the scandal or the crime. So we talked to, you know, journalists and authors. We talked to lawyers. We talked to, you know, people that are actually involved or close to the case. We even talked to like a former sommelier for French Laundry about, you know, some wine heists that took place. That's coming later in the season. That's not the first episode, but stuff like that. It's great to be able to get to that source so that you get the real story. And specifically with the first episode in true crime, you want to do that in an ethical way. And so you want to, you know, be talking to people who actually knew the victim of this crime, who can speak to who they were and what really happened, and then treat that story really respectfully.
I was going to ask, because, you know, that's that could be one of those situations where there's no such thing as bad publicity, right? But mm-hmm. then, you know, people can be really touchy, especially, and, you know, I can say this with a lot of confidence because I come from the spirit side. Wine people can be really protective. I'm using that term, you know, I'm being very, you know, just hear about like how I say this. But they're very protective about their IP and their story and their history. And sometimes if there's something scandalous that happened, they might not want to talk about it or put it out there. But I think it's actually, we live in a different culture now where we need to be kind of wide open. It's like, you know, if you're trying to like sweep it under the rug or, you know, cork it, you know, it's then you kind of come across as, I don't know. Just it kind of, it's like this unnecessary, like secretive kind of thing where it's like, just talk about it. People respect you more if you just talk about it. And so I think there's a neat angle there for getting people on board for the show, right?
Yeah.
Did you find that?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of layers to the people that work in the wine world. You know, you hear about of course, like the wine snobs of the world, I guess. But I think they're just really protective of the artistry of wine. And so I guess you wouldn't want to talk about, you know, the darker side when you could instead like just speak on something delicious and beautiful, this like piece of art, this piece of history. Like we get into that a lot too in the show, talking about, you know, what really goes into making wine and, you know, what really happens or what it really means when wine is destroyed or these kinds of things happen in the wine world, because we wanted to examine the value of wine beyond the monetary value. Cause like it is heart, right. It is like it's art, it's history, it's time traveling in a glass, you know, it's very, very, important in, I mean, you guys talk about, you know, spirits and wine and beer and on all these delicious beverages. And I guess maybe you could speak on like, if wine is maybe held up to a higher standard or yeah. something than other spirits.
I mean, here's the main thing that I think we should all know. And I think that everyone should kind of just take a step back and realize that these are all agricultural products made by farmers, mm-hmm. essentially, you know, and there's something to be said about the humble beginnings of what a grape is or what a grain is, you know, an apple, a pear, before they become an agave plant, especially, you know, there's so much agriculture and love that goes into raising these plants first. That has to happen first. And then also kind of, I mean, maintaining grapevines, it's like just insane. And there's a lot that goes into that and a lot of people that are responsible for it that don't get the praise that they should and that they deserve to get. You know, it's like you have to start with the raw material, and the raw material takes a lot of hands to produce, you know, and, you know, that's one of the things that gets me a lot of times. It's like, because I work in Napa and I go to all these different wineries and tasting rooms and, you know, there's really, really fancy places in Napa, you know, and they all want to come across with this high luxury kind of thing. But, you know, I always look at it because I'm a farm kid from Oklahoma. I look at it and I'm like, I just can't help but think about the rows of vines and like how much work went into that first. The wine, and I'm not discounting the craftsmanship of the winemakers themselves and the like the barrel room managers and you know all this. It's, you know, it's just take it back down to what it is and then like stop tripping, you know, about like
yeah.
Sure. You know. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't disagree at all, Damon. And you know, I absolutely, I will 100%, you know, bang on that timpani with you that it takes just as much craft and skill to make like an excellent Pinot Noir as it does to make like a delicious, really crushable lager that you want to drink, but it's, you know, 90 degrees outside. Like, right. You know, no one could walk in off the street and make either product. But I also do think when I think of the world of wine, there is just, you know, through centuries and centuries and centuries of the way these grapes were cultivated and who could grow grapes in the world versus places where it was too cold to grow grapes efficiently. Like there is a sort of cachet to that, which is something that I wanted to ask you about, Ashley, is like when I think of, you know, true crime and wine, it seems to me like it's a very different kind of crime than you would expect if we're talking, if your podcast was about, say, the construction industry in New Jersey, right? like this is very much, you know, I think of it as kind of the art realm. It's kind of like art heists committed by these, you know, dapper, you know, gentlemen thieves in tuxedos. Is that, am I way off? Do I have sort of a romantic image of it? Or is it kind of very much that more sort of, I don't know. Does the crime around wine have the same cachet as wine itself? I guess is the kernel of my question.
Well, Greg, I mean, like you just mentioned the French Laundry wine heist that was like, what was it? Like something like 50 grand worth of wine or?
Oh gosh, I think it was
zero or
hundreds. Yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of wine stolen. But even I think in that episode, which will come out later in the season, we talk about, you know, whether this was a sophisticated crime or whether the burglars, the wine thieves were sophisticated in their crimes. And it's just so hard to say. We also cover on another episode, the Rudy Kerniawan wine scandal where he was, you know, making fake wine or really he was selling cheaper bottles of wine that he had kind of mismatched together for a lot of money and like defrauding a lot of people. So we'll get into that at some point in the season. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of think of it that way too, where everyone kind of has like a monocle and a mustache and they're drinking like a really fancy bottle of wine and talking about.
It's like the D.B. Cooper kind of thing where it's like, you know, they're just like the coolest. Like, do you think there'll ever be like a national, like, French Laundry Wine Heist Day, where like everyone gets together, like there's a festival, like conference. I don't know, but
you know. Something like that. Yeah, you never know. But I do think it's actually more pedestrian than we realize, or more common certainly than we realize. I had no idea that there was so much of this going on, so much fraud, so much theft and like scandal in the wine world. I was really shocked when we like started to dig into these stories.
So I want to ask you as a journalist, and this is actually something I've always wanted to ask a true crime reporter. This is just the first time I've gotten the chance to do it. How do you sort of square that? Because I mean, you know, I am not immune to the allure of true crime. I'm more of a cult documentary man myself, but it's very much in the same wheelhouse. But how do you, as someone who's reporting on this, kind of square the crimes that you're reporting with, you know, the fact that these are actual people that actual bad things happen to, and kind of what is your approach to kind of reporting on that in a way that is informative and sensitive and entertaining at the same time?
Right. I think that again goes into involving people who were connected to the crime or the victim in some way. I do another podcast, which is only about cold cases here in Washington State. So for me, when I do that show, I'm trying to help. I'm trying to shine light on something that still needs to be solved. So I'm not just talking about it to talk about it. I'm talking about it to try and find a new lead, maybe something that was dropped. I'm trying to bring more attention to this case in the hopes that, you know, something happens with it and it can finally be resolved. And when it comes to Vinfamous, we cover cases that have already been through the court system. They've already, like, one already has a documentary out about it. You know, we're covering new ground in a way, but these are stories that kind of already have a beginning, middle, and end. So we're not theorizing about, you know, what happened or why they did it. We know why they did it, and we're going to tell you. So that's really where, I guess, that kind of comes in.
It would probably be kind of insensitive to the people who like suffered these like murders and deaths in their families that are cold cases.
Absolutely.
Talking about wine. They're like, where's this bottle of Chateau Lafite? You know,
yeah, let's still, talk about the real crime here. Yeah, yeah. Totally. That's what we didn't want to do. But we, I think we were successful in that. Only the first episode is about murder, and we, you know, were as sensitive as we could be. And we talked to, you know, the victims, friends and the private investigator involved, and made sure that people knew how wonderful this person was, and that what happened to him was truly a tragedy.
Wow. I mean, like, I can't wait to listen to this first episode. but
especially being so local to it. Yeah.
I know. I'm going to, is it already up today?
It is. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm going to listen to this on my way out to Napa today. I can't wait.
But you get to be right in the setting.
I know. I'm going to have a completely different perspective on my workplace now. But let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. When we get back, we'll continue talking with Ashley Smith from Vinfamous. Back in a second.
Every glass of wine tells a story. And these stories reveal hidden histories, flavors, passions, and sometimes they unravel our darkest desires. In Wine Enthusiast's newest podcast, Vinfamous, journalist Ashley Smith dissects the underbelly of the wine world. We hear from the people who know what it means when the product of love and care becomes the source of greed, arson, even murder. Each episode takes listeners into the mysterious and historic world of winemaking and the crimes that have since become, well, Vinfamous. This podcast pairs well with wine lovers, history nerds, and crime junkies. So grab a glass of your favorite and follow the podcast to join as we delve into the twists and turns behind the all-time most shocking wine crimes. Follow Vinfamous on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and be sure to follow the show so you never miss a scandal. New episodes drop every other Wednesday. Cheers.
This episode is supported by HRN business member Analytics Solutions. Analytics Solutions empower business owners to confidently make informed decisions and positively impact profitability. They provide a host of technology-enabled solutions for small to mid-sized businesses across a range of industries, including restaurants, food service delivery, and restaurant consulting. Visit analytix.com to learn more. Analytics Solutions supports HRN's creative, educational reporting and storytelling that drive conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network today. And in the studio, we have Ashley Smith from Vinfamous. And we were talking about this awesome show that airs today. Congratulations again on that.
Thank you.
And we've been talking about the kind of like true crime in the wine industry. And what a great concept. I was wondering where a lot of these stories get sourced from. I mean, I know that like we had mentioned the French Laundry, kind of the theft, the art theft, the monocle mustachioed turtleneck wearing. It makes me think of that like body moving video from Beastie Boys.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Right. Something like that. But yeah, you know, we talked about some of these different things. And we mentioned the first episode, which is Murder in the Vineyard. And I was just wondering, like, where these stories come from and how you source them. Is it something internal? Is it from the organization? Do you go out and find them yourself, get the scoop?
Yeah, well, the great thing about this being brand new and season one is you have so much to choose from. Literally hundreds and hundreds of years of stories to kind of pick through. And it was really a collaboration between the folks at Wine Enthusiast and our producer Danielle at Pod People and the whole team there to hammer down six of the most interesting, intriguing, and eclectic stories, I guess. We wanted like a broad genre of things to talk about. So there will be an episode on, you know, arson, an episode on sabotage. And then our first episode is of course, about murder. It takes place in 2015 in Napa Valley. It's a business deal gone bad, turned into a legal battle, turned into, unfortunately, a deadly negotiation. And we get into exactly how that comes to be, all of the details, what happened, and then, of course, the aftermath.
Oh, is this the murder that happened like on the rooftop of that restaurant in downtown Napa?
No, but will you send me that for season 2, please?
Well, okay, well, yeah. definitely. Okay, cool. Sorry. Continue, please.
No, I mean, I don't want to give, you know, too much away, but
I wasn't gonna say too much. I'll email you that one later.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited too. I think you brought up like the laborers that work in the wine industry and how that could, I mean, I know that there are scandals around that. That's something I'd love to visit in season 2, but that's basically, you know, how we find these stories is you scour the internet and then you see which, you know, stories have a conclusion. Maybe it's not, you know, a too recent thing because then it's still kind of unfolding and you want to be able to give as much detail as possible and a conclusion for the listener. So, you know, we look at what fits that criteria and then, you know, who wants to talk to us basically, because as you said before, it is hard to get a foot in the door in the wine world because it's, I think, a very kind of protective, tight knit community in a way. But that's where wine enthusiast comes in. Great.
And it's very protected in the wine community, but like in the spirit side, you know, they kind of like romanticize it. Like this was this pirate's rum and they killed this many people. And then they were shot by Thomas Jefferson who, wait a minute. Actually, wasn't there a scandal with Thomas Jefferson's wine? Didn't someone like buy a fake bottle of Thomas Jefferson's like?
We'll get to that.
Okay, cool. I'm not giving it all away. Sorry. I'm just fascinated by this. Like, I just love the stories. Honestly, it's the whole reason why I'm in this industry, the bar, restaurant, booze industry in the first place, is because, you know, I come from a graphic design background and I would sit at the bar and just listen to people tell stories all the time. And I was like, this is the coolest. And, you know, I was 19 years old. I shouldn't have been in there. So so I have a lot of stories. I have more stories than I guess most as far as going back to 21. I got a head start, as it were, but yeah, I think you're right about the difference between, you know, the wine industry is very protective. And so it's really cool that you've got people to open up about this and these stories and kind of, I wouldn't say expose, just really enlighten in a lot of ways. And I think, like I said, I can't wait to get into this show.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's fascinating. It's something you just don't really hear about that often, or at least I certainly didn't as someone who doesn't work in the world of wine. A lot of these stories were brand new to me and I didn't know all the details and I wanted to get to the bottom of, you know, what happened. And then, you know, when you get a good story, you know, you can't wait to share it with people. So
absolutely.
I hope people again love this season as much as I enjoyed making it, because I really do think these are some really fascinating stories.
I agree. And, you know, really when it comes down to it, I think that's what we just do is like, it's kind of like our human nature is to, especially, you know, on a social level, we all want to know like these interesting details and these stories and backstories. I mean, it happens with the wine itself and with the spirits and cocktails and just, you know, and beyond just alcohol, but everyone wants to know, you know, the story behind this thing and like, why this and what is it and where did it come from and what monks made it for 1,000 years? Like there must've been a scandal in there. Right. But you know, like I see it firsthand every week in wine country where, you know, as far as a lot of the wineries go, it's, they talk about the vineyard sites with the wine varietals and like a little bit of story about the owners. And a lot of times, I'm not trying to play down the wine industry, but you know, there's a lot of changing of hands of wineries. It's not necessarily a lot of people who start their own wineries these days. They buy other vineyards and wineries. And so they kind of adopt the history along with it, or they buy the history if there is any kind of profound history. And they just want to promote in a romantic way and, you know, sell like the luxury. And so I love this. And it's like, not in a way that's like, I drink wine all the time. I'm not a wine hater. I just love stories. So like, especially these, I watch like Bones and Castle and Psych and all these like detective shows and like Only Murders in the Building, which is a TV show about podcasting about true crime.
Yeah.
You know, and like, this is totally my kind of, this is like the perfect mashup of the things that I like. So
awesome. You're going to be our number one fan. I can feel it.
I am. I'm going to listen to it right after this. But actually, you know, just to kind of geek out a little bit, we've talked a lot about the show and the production and some of the kind of stories, not to give too much away. But what we talked about at the top of the show today was the fact that often, most times, you know, over 500 episodes now,
that's we are amazing, talking, by the way. Sorry, not to interrupt you, but like, that's unbelievable in the podcast world.
Yeah.
Congratulations on you. Over 500 episodes. That's awesome.
I feel thank every you. One of them too. but thank you so much for that. But the thing is, we mostly talk about very, very direct relations to the bar or the distillery. We get a lot of authors on and journalists. We get, you know, we get to talk about, this is the first time that I can remember. I mean, we've definitely had people on who do podcasts, but like, they're kind of involved in the actual business of booze as well. This is the first time we've had someone on who's like just directly, just you are a radio person. So I want to talk to you about some geeky stuff real quick about hosting radio shows.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite microphone?
You know what? So everyone loves like the Shure SM7B. That's like the end all be all. But I've really been enjoying the, they're like newer, smaller, more podcaster on the go friendly version of that mic, which is the MB7 from Shure. It's just like so much easier to use. And you can still do XLR. You don't have to do USB, but, I don't know. It just, I'm all about the ease. I used to want like the fanciest microphone and the nicest setup and everything is soundproofed and perfect. But now I'm just kind of going with the flow.
Totally. Yeah. I used to use a Shure KSM-27. Then I started using, I've got one of the blue cardioid condenser mics with the basket, you know, and you know, pop filters and all this stuff. But honestly, these days, I really like, Blue also makes a very podcast easy, like type package that you can, like you said, on the go podcaster. The world has changed, the audio world has changed and kind of adapted to that very on the go ease. I mean, we used to all run around with those Zoom recorders which are great. I mean, they're great for like, say when we take the show to like Bar Convent in Brooklyn or Tales of the Cocktail, and we're on the street and we want to get quick sound bites, because you're running around the town and you're just seeing like hundreds of thousands of people who are in the industry from all over the world, and you'll run into people and it's like, oh, I just need to get a quick interview. It's better than the iPhone mic and recording.
Which is like surprisingly good.
Yeah.
Like not for top quality, but I'm kind of shocked. Like I feel like the tech has really kind of caught up with demand in a lot
exactly.
of ways.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and that's what's kind of cool about this medium too, is that it makes the bar to entry super, super low. And it's democratizing and a little bit infuriating, because if everyone can make a podcast, everyone will make a podcast.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We're kind of seeing that. But, you know, the people still know what good is. Like, people still know what good storytelling is. People still know what good audio is. And it's cool that you don't need, you know, the fanciest, shiniest tools anymore. What you need is a good sense of story and dogged reporting and, someone more talented than me to make music in the background and just like, you know, something that can tell these stories that are messy and intricate and have all these moving parts and different people. And I'm sure in the realm of true crime, people who might not necessarily want to talk to you about exactly what happened, yeah. and put all those together into something that, you know, like we're talking about, like all the cool things we love behind the bar tells an intriguing story, you know?
You know, it's funny because at the very beginning of the pandemic, I was helping out here in San Rafael, California. I was helping out my buddies at their music store, guitar audio store. And the pandemic hit and they kind of shut down a little bit, but they were still open for, you know, like curbside pickup and like a little bit of storefront. You know, it was like a little kind of stanchioned off at the front. And they weren't letting anyone come in and like touch guitars or drum kits or pianos or anything like that. But, you know, you could come up and buy some guitar strings or whatever, a cable. And the only thing that you could really look at was this giant display of like Steinberg and Scarlett audio interfaces, podcast mics and headphones. And that was like, it just became a podcast equipment store. And they sold so much stuff at the very beginning of the pandemic. So it was like banana bread, starting yeast, your sourdough yeast, your sourdough starter, and podcasting. But then, you know, now it's been a couple of years, and I was talking with the owner of the store. There's two of them actually, and two stores that is. And he was like, "Man, you know, it's funny. It's like a couple of years later, a lot of these people come in. They have these podcast kits, and they're wanting to see if we want to buy them back or if they can return them all this time later because they're like." They realize that it's not as easy as it seems. You know, it's like the equipment is very available. It's really available and it's not expensive. I mean, I think those Shure mics with the USB are like $200 or less, maybe somewhere around there. But it really is. It comes down to the content of your show and how you produce it. And, you know, the equipment's one thing. I mean, that's the reason why also most people have like a guitar sitting in the corner of their apartment that's yeah. covered in dust, you know, because it seems like a good idea and it seems cool and it is, but it's more work than it looks like, you know, or yeah. sounds like rather in this
case. It really reminds me, I actually went to college for photography and that was like one of our main principles was like, you can buy the fanciest camera, you can spend so much money, but if you don't know how to use that thing, if you don't have an eye for it, you know, you're just going to take the same picture that your grandma would of like your graduation or something. Like it's not going to be as good. You need that special creative spark or at least like the gumption to learn how to make it the best it can be. And the same goes for podcasting.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
What we're saying is don't podcast without adult supervision.
Exactly. Yeah. The wine makes it easier, right?
Yeah. Certainly makes this podcast a lot easier to work on. Or maybe it just makes it feel that way.
I'm not sure. Exactly.
But speaking of wine, I kind of want to, you know, we've talked about journalism. We've talked about like pursuing these stories, the crimes, the equipment, all of that. But, you know, let's give the people what they came here for. What are some of your favorite wines and how did you get into being interested in the world of wine and wanting to sort of combine your twin passions as everyone, I guess, in the studio has today of journalism and drinking.
Yeah, I'm new to that, which is super exciting. I'm still waiting. I don't think Wine Enthusiast has sent me a bottle of wine yet, but I
what?
Hope to.
Oh, no.
No, I do love wine, but yeah, I've never worked for a winery. I've never worked in a bar. I've always... I worked at radio for 12 years. So that was like, you know, my first job out of college. And I would drink, you know, the $2 chuck and like the cheapest stuff that you can find. But nowadays I love what we call natty wine, which is, you know, low intervention, natural wine. That's really my favorite. And there's in particular this place in Oregon, which I think Oregon just has some of the best natural wine. I don't know what it is about the Willamette Valley, but so good. It's called Holden Farms and it's just this one guy. He barely ever puts out wine, but he made my favorite wine of all time, which is this like skin contact Sauvignon Blanc that was so fresh and fruity. I think I bought like 5 or 6 bottles. It was so hard to find. And this was in 2016 or 2017, but anytime I saw it on a list or at the store, which, I mean, that was when you could barely even find natural wine in any stores, I would just snatch it up, and I miss it so much. I guess I am really passionate about wine because I can just like taste that wine. I can picture it in my head right now, and I wish I could have it again. But that's the problem with natural wine is you can't really like stock up and age it. It doesn't age right. Well. So that's a bummer.
Well, it's a bummer, but it's also, I think Greg and I were going to say the same thing. It is a bummer, but also it's, you know, it's like, be here now, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Drink, you know, don't, it's, what does Souther always say about his collection, his bar at home? It's not a museum. It's an amusement park, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But I was going to say, I love the natural wine craze, and I love how that is echoing something that I think we've seen happening throughout the food world for maybe probably like the last 30 years, where if, you know, the story of the late 20th century when it comes to food and drink and everybody's palates is one of homogenization and smoothing things out. You know, you go to the store and there is one type of tomato, three types of ice cream, two types of cheese. You know, it's like, you know, there is the apple. It comes in three different colors, but they all kind of taste like mush. And, you know, you had that with the world of, you can really see this in the world of scotch, where like blended scotch was really, you know, the gold standard, and single malt was something that, like, you know, weirdos and kooks drank who liked that smoky flavor, which I think is still kind of true. But, you know, I think we're coming around to re-embracing a lot of the subtleties and the processes. And I don't want to use the word flaws, but let's just call them the
characters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The characters and like almost the entropy that goes into making these things, where it's like, these are products that are made by nature. Nature is an unpredictable thing. You're going to get flavors in here that, you know, you might not expect. And instead of authoring them out, we're kind of saying, oh, this is interesting. And we're celebrating them, which I think is really nifty.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is like something that is so cool about natural wine. Like, even though it's trendy now, it's like become a thing now, doing this podcast, I learned that that was just the way it used to be. That was the original way that you made wine. And one of the episodes that we get into is about a famous Italian winemaker who has his like incredible wine sabotaged. He had this sustainable system, you know, before a lot of other people did, and he was so passionate about it. And I think that's really interesting that we're kind of revisiting the original ways of low intervention winemaking. And while it doesn't age the best, so you can't really stock up on it, it does keep you here in the now, and you never really know what you're going to get when you pop a bottle. It's a lot of really unique flavors. And I think that's kind of special about it. So that doing this podcast and learning that made me love natural wine all the more.
You know, I feel like we could go another hour talking about natural wine. we'll have to have you back on
for season two.
Yeah, exactly.
We talk about that rooftop murder.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, I agree with you. I'm super psyched about natural wine and where it's at. And, you know, having lived in Brooklyn for the last 20 years, I've seen like all the kind of resurgence of like natural like fermentation in like all these cool hip things, you know, that your corner and our corner over there of the United States kind of tend to lean in on.
The first time I had natural wine was in New York. So absolutely.
But yeah, I think it's such a cool thing. And also, what a conversation piece whenever you get to try some natural wine with someone. It's like, that's a cool thing to me. I never really sit and drink natural wine by myself. It's always like such a conversation starter. And
yeah, it's always so fun to share.
Yeah.
And like see what everyone tastes and, you know, how weird is this bottle? Look at how, you know, funky and like, you know, fermented it looks, I guess. You know, you get that like the sediment at the bottom and it gets kind of murky, and the darker the color. I love like a good orange wine, so like the darker that color is, I'm like, oh, I know this is gonna be good.
Yeah, one of the wineries I'm a member at in Napa, they do a natural Merlot, so it's like it's a Merlot that's just got all that crazy acidity and funk to it, and it's just like, it is an incredible pairing with food. But Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we gotta have you back on to talk about all of our favorite natural wines. But also, you should swing down here if you're ever in Northern California. We can take a tour of some of these wineries and maybe do some investigative reporting out there in the field.
Together. There you go. I'll bring the Zoom recorder for season two. We'll get into it.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, this has been awesome. Greg, don't you agree? I mean, what a great way to kick off March.
I know. Fantastic. Yeah. Happy. Yeah. Happy almost end of winter, everybody. And by all means, check out Vinfamous. I'm super excited to listen to it and to see where the rest of the series is going. And congratulations again. It sounds wonderful and I can't wait to dive in.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check out Heritage Radio Network for so many more programs like this one. And until next week, y'all, I'm really happy to say happy almost spring also, Greg. And cheers to both of you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.